From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 8th day of September, 2025. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at agmarket.net out of Normal, Illinois. We'll hear from Mark Russo, too, from Everstream Analytics about the weather forecast. He's in Chicago. And then we'll turn our attention to what's happening in Edwardsville at the SIU-based National Corn to Ethanol Research Center. Yin Yang is the interim director there. I spoke with her during the Farm Progress Show at the end of the month of August, and we'll do all of that on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world online on demand at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
December corn for the day at $4.21¾ of a cent, up 3¾. March 3 higher at $4.39½, and the May corn at $4.49¾, up 2½ cents. November soybeans, $10.33¾, 6¾ higher. January at $10.52¾, up 7¼. And March 7¼ higher at $10.68. Bean meal futures up $1.40. The bean oil 17 cents higher. Wheat futures in the December 4½ higher for the soft red at $5.23¾. The hard red at $5.17¼. That finished 12 cents higher for the day. The live cattle futures at $2.35.80. Down 17½ cents. Feeders at $3.59.17½. $1.27½ higher. And lean hogs at $95.15, 87½ higher. Crude oil for the day at $62.32, up 45 cents a barrel. Diesel fuel about 2¾ of a cent higher. Gasoline on the RBOB down, well, just about even for the day, $1.95¼ of a cent per gallon. We're now joined by Kurt Kimmel of AgMarket.net to take a look at the marketplace on a Monday afternoon. Hi, Kurt. Thanks for being with us.
Well, glad to be here, Todd. Thank you.
It's an up day. Tell me about it.
Oh, look at the corn chart on the daily chart. Down, up, down, up, down. We had a reversal down, reversal up. It's every other day is different. And in beans, they kind of reverse back up after seeing some reversals back and forth in through here. But no, to answer your question, we're climbing the wall of worry here for the most part. I think the market's hanging in there quite well. There's some decent demand underneath the marketplace and no big sales, nothing from China, of course. But overall, the shipments and the weekly export sales report are running fairly decent. Over the weekend, we did have an actual patchy frost freeze up in the northwest. Still trying to get an assessment on it. Their crop was kind of variable where it was when this occurred, but for the most part, the GSA team kind of feels maybe 5% out of that North Dakota region in through there, but the market's not real concerned about it just at the moment. The overall weather pattern is, of course, going to be warmer and drier. And that's the main concern here as we start to move forward here. The last 30 days, if you look at the 30-day precip for what we've had and what we have in the future, it's just bone dry for the most part. We'll see how the market moves forward here and digest this news as we move forward. But kind of step one is the conditions report this afternoon. Not expecting a big drop. Corn, good to excellent category, expected to be 68% versus 69% last week. Soybeans, 64% good to excellent versus 65% last week. As a nation, we'll have our first real corn harvest progress, expected to be about 5% complete as a nation versus 5% a year ago there, Todd.
On Friday this week at 11 a.m. Central Time, USDA will release its next crop production report. What are your expectations?
Well, the Bloomberg estimate, I did see that here just a little while ago. Corn yields expect to be down 2.8 bushels, 186 bushels the acre. Bean yield down 0.4, down to 53.8. Two, as a ag market team, we're a little lower than that. We kind of feel the corn could be yield down to 184.8 and the bean yield down to 52.5. just judging by early harvest activity. There's some decent crops out there, but it's no record breaker that we're seeing for what little has taken place thus far. Guys are just kind of nosing into it through here. So we'll have some more actual physical data here as we move on forward. But that's kind of going to be the market maker here at the end of the week, just a little tighter fundamental situation. Now, the big thing is a lot of the analysts are still looking at if we lower the production, we're going to lower demand. Well, you might be able to do that on the beans, but this corn demand just remains huge. And I think you can back corn demand off on the supply demand balance sheet for a month or two, but you just can't back it off a whole lot, Todd.
As you know well, farmers are behind in their marketing for both corn and soybeans. Soybeans are an issue because of China not being in the marketplace. However, the Mississippi River is a problem at this point, and meteorologists are beginning to throw up caution flags, particularly as it's related to the next couple of weeks with hot, dry weather coming and conditions could worsen already right at low stage for the river in some places. I'm wondering if you're concerned about basis deterioration from the low water levels and freight rates and whether they have begun to creep up or not.
Yeah, we'll start to see that. And that'll be a concern if this trend continues, because basically the transportation along that region is going to be pretty much a concern. It's going to affect the bottom line. The other part is, of course, the export news out of the Gulf. We'll see how that unfolds too. But there's been plenty of moisture out of the south that out of the south feeding the river, starting to dry up too. Basis wise, you really got to push the pencil in through here. If you take the fall bid in the heat of fall in October, it's pretty wide and it's pretty low price. But if you start to get elevator bids or on out to further months in here, there's some economic advantage maybe storing this crop and not selling at the fall low end through here. So you got to push the pencil, see what your storage options are, and see what your merchandisers are going to do working with you. Because there's cases you can pick up 40-some cents in beans as much as 30 cents in corn by storing it. That's the price difference between the two. Now, that's not standard from elevator to elevator. But if you look at Decatur bids, you can pull that up and look at the low bid in October versus the bid further out. If you have to pay commercial storage, it could pay in some cases. Now, that's not true everywhere across the Midwest, but each individual needs to kind of push the pencil here and see what type of opportunities are out there.
Hey, thanks much. I appreciate it.
Very good. Take care.
You too. Kurt Kimmel is with AgMarket.net. Today's agricultural news. We'll start with California and E15. The California General Assembly's approval of E15 sales last week, and the governor's expected okay, is expected to boost corn demand at a time corn growers are about to harvest a record crop. The Renewable Fuels Association Troy Bradenkamp says once Governor Newsom signs the E15 bill, California will become the largest E15 consumer state in the nation.
That adds another 500, almost 600 million gallons of new demand for American ethanol when California adopts E15.
Bradenkamp says this comes at a time when U.S. corn growers are expected to harvest a record 17 billion bushels of corn.
It's 200 million bushel new demand for new corn grind. So that is significant when you're looking at one of the biggest crops, maybe the biggest crop in history, coming in this fall.
Bradenkamp says it's also a political boost for year-round E15 sales.
Now we have to use that momentum and convince Congress that they need to resolve this legislatively to allow for E15 to be sold nationwide year-round and get rid of that summer driving season restriction for E15. That would be the cherry on top of the cupcake.
He adds it helps to win E15 approval by California, a blue state that has not been ethanol friendly until now. In other agricultural news, President Trump Thursday signed an order to implement a trade deal with Japan that is expected to increase U.S. agricultural sales by $8 billion a year. Over the past 5 years, Japan has bought on average just under $12.9 billion in annual farm goods from the United States. Spelling out agricultural trade, the order stated specifically the government of Japan is working toward an expedited implementation of a 75% increase of U.S. rice procurements within the minimum access rice scheme and purchases of U.S. agricultural goods, including corn, soybeans, fertilizer, bioethanol, as well as other U.S. products, in amounts totaling $8 billion a year. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Today we'll hear another in the series of interviews I did from the University of Illinois tent at the Farm Progress Show in late August. We were joined on stage by Yin Zhang. She is the director of the Corn to Ethanol Research Center. I asked her to tell me about it and its mission.
Yes, thank you. Good morning, everybody. It's a great honor to be able to come over to this tent. Actually, I'm the interim center director from the National Corn to Ethanol Research Center on the campus of Southern Illinois University, Edwardsville. So this center was created as an R&D facility, scale-up facility to help the corn to ethanol industry. We opened the door in 2003. So if you get a chance, visit us. We are about 30 minutes from downtown St. Louis. What you're going to see is a mini dry grind ethanol plant. That's pretty much what we are. A small dry grind ethanol plant with lab service. The first 10 years when we opened the door, we did a lot of just taking new technologies to test and validate them before send them back to the corn to ethanol industry. So in the past decade or so, my colleagues and I, we were able to expand our horizon to retrofit corn to ethanol production system to make other biofuels, also make bioproducts. So that's a way to summarize NSERC.
These are bolt-on kind of functions to existing biofuel or ethanol plants. What kind of other biofuels are you able to produce from them in that case?
Great question, Todd. So in the past decade or so, we also scale up biobutanol production. And in addition to that, we worked with DOE lab from UC Berkeley campus. We worked on isoprenol. As a matter of fact, their group are still working on to use isoprenol as one of the feedstock to make a jet fuel.
So if you're able to do that, how many places have you been working with in the state of Illinois, or are they mostly outside of the state of Illinois?
Great question. So our facility, we designed mostly work for as a contractual research organization, very different from a lot of other organic growth research facility. So because of that, our main income actually comes from doing what we call contractual research service. To answer Todd's question, we probably worked with more companies outside Illinois state. So just because of the nature, then it's all based on the needs, utilize the pilot facility.
How hard is it to take on an existing plant the ethanol production and convert it to SAF or sustainable aviation fuel?
It's actually a great question. So don't want to do this very, very technically, but from over a 1,000 feet overview, the corn to ethanol industry is able to make ethanol as a feedstock to support the production of sustainable aviation fuel. So our current facility is not good to be used to make jet fuel, but it's extremely good to make a qualified ethanol as a feedstock to make the production of SAF.
I did not understand that. What qualifies it then to be moved and used in other places to create SAF? What's the qualification?
Beautiful, beautiful question. So I can tell you right now, there is a company who's doing almost a commercial size jet fuel production, which is called LanzaJet. Their headquarters is actually in Chicago, Illinois. They utilize a pathway called alcohol to jet. So their production, for the moment, the majority, I believe, the ethanol they use is actually from Brazil. It's called from the sucrose-based ethanol. The main reason we cannot immediately use most of the corn starchy ethanol to make jet fuel is something we call the carbon intensity score. So one of the challenges to utilize 70 billion gallons of corn starchy ethanol to support jet fuel production will be lower the carbon intensity score of what we do. So it's quite challenging. However, actually, I mentioned that yesterday at another meeting. To me, as a technical people who's done ethanol about 20 years, so I think it's not as challenging as we think. As a matter of fact, my center are in the middle of signing a contract with an international company by taking carbon dioxide from corn starch fermentation to make an industrial chemical. By doing that, we can immediately knock down the carbon intensity score to a high level. By doing that, if the results come from NSERC will look promising, we will help to for our industry to adapt that technology. Immediately, you're going to make 16 billion gallons of ethanol, corn starch ethanol from this country qualified to make jet fuel.
That's all of the ethanol in this country. That is a fantastic story to tell. LanzaJet, of course, has their pilot plant, if I remember correctly, in Georgia, but it's along the port. And now we know why, because they're using ethanol, of course, imported from Brazil, made from sugarcane rather than from corn, but they are working very hard with you, I suppose, to make sure that they can manage to make that from the crop grown right here in the United States.
Yes.
Thank you much. I appreciate you taking the time with me today.
Thank you. Thank you for all the questions.
Yan Zhang is the interim director of the National Corn to Ethanol Research Center with SIU.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Monday afternoon. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Our theme music is written, performed, and produced by my brother, Tim Gleason. He's a farmer in Elkhart, Illinois. That's Logan County. Don't forget to visit our website at willag.org, willag.org. Mark Russo from Everstream Analytics now joins us to take a look at the forecast for the growing regions across the planet. Hi, Mark. Thanks for being with us. I'd like you to start by taking a look backwards first over the weekend. I know there were some cold temperatures, particularly in the northwestern part of the Corn Belt, enough to do any or a little damage at all?
Hey, Todd. Yeah, we don't think that there was any issues with the colder temperatures here over the weekend. Can't rule out a few pockets of frost in the northwest, Midwest, but based on the stage of the crop, even those types of temperatures should not have caused a problem. At this stage of the season, you really need a hard freeze with temperatures in the 20s for numerous hours to even begin to cause some issues. So, you know, maybe a few kind of burn back leaves or some patchy frost, but we don't see this as being a problem.
I've been doing a lot of manual labor over the last week because the weather has been fantastic. I'd like to get another week's worth in. And under these kinds of conditions, I take it that's probably not going to be possible.
Yeah, well, overall here, this drier than normal pattern. It looks to continue not only across Illinois, but across much of the Corn Belt over the next 2 weeks. And along with that, we're seeing temperatures now return to warmer than normal levels after this, you know, unseasonably cool spell here in recent weeks. That's, you know, dramatically coming to an end over the next few days, and warmer than normal temperatures look to then be in place basically second half of this week all the way, you know, through next week and the start of the following week.
Hey, I do have one question about that. I think that these cool temperatures, which have been persistent about every 45 days or so this growing season, does that look to you like mid-October we'll be back into something that's colder than average?
That's certainly a possibility, but not seeing any real strong signals there or any, you know, kind of tie into the cycle of what we've seen with these periods of cooler weather. Well, certainly this last one was the most significant here of the past several months, but doesn't necessarily mean that it has to come back the middle portion of October. Sometimes those cycles can be tied to tropical convective patterns across the equatorial areas, and that might be one of the reasons here for it lately. But again, as we get into this time of year, you tend to have different drivers of the pattern compared to what was the case, you know, the heart of summer.
Now, speaking of drivers of the pattern, you told me that it's going to be warmer than average. It's also going to be dry. I'm wondering what that means for the river system in the Midwest.
Yeah, with the pattern here coming up, the river levels, especially the mid to lower Mississippi Basin, are heading toward a period of restrictions. Already we're seeing in places such as Cairo and Memphis, water levels that are below the 10-year average. And with this drier and warmer pattern, that'll quickly, you know, lower even further towards or even getting to threshold levels of restrictions here, probably, you know, next week or within the next few weeks.
That won't be good news for producers who are bringing crop off the field and depending on the river system to move that into the export ports at New Orleans, which reminds me, going further to the south, we probably should check in with Mato Grosso, in particular in Brazil, to see if the beginning of their planting season can start. That usually depends on whether they get rainfall and the end of the dry season there.
Yeah, we're closely watching and forecasting the weather for Mato Grosso, and we are expecting a timely onset of the rainy season across Mato Grosso and Center West Brazil over the next few weeks. Now, this week is on the drier side, and next week there is some debate in computer model guidance how much rainfall will Mato Grosso receive, but to us, there's an overwhelming majority of signals that point towards the pattern just becoming more conducive for rain development as we go from now through the end of the month. And again, like you said, Todd, once the rains kick in, that initiates planting, and so we are expecting a timely, you know, or normal window of planting here coming up.
Thank you much. We'll talk with you again next week.
You're welcome, Todd.
Mark Russo is with Everstream Analytics. Joined us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report that came to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world online on demand at WILLAG.org. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.